A deadly bacterial strain is apparently taking more American lives than the AIDS virus. A new study published today in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, estimates that almost 19,000 people in this country died from the antibiotic-resistant strain of staph, which is known as the methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, or sometimes called MRSA. And the study warns that the infection is spreading much more rapidly than previously thought. Joining us in just a moment will be Dr. Elizabeth Brancroft, who wrote an editorial on MRSA in JAMA. Have you been affected by this infection? Or if you have questions about it for our expert, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And joining us now is Dr. Elizabeth Bancroft, medical epidemiologist at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health and author of the editorial Antimicrobial Resistance Not Just for Hospitals in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And Dr. Bancroft, it's very good of you to be with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Dr. Bancroft is with us from Marketplace Productions in Los Angeles. And first off, what is MRSA and why have so many of us never heard of it?
Oh, sure. MRSA is a strain of Staph aureus. So I'm going to back up for a moment there. Staph aureus is a bacteria, and it can be roughly divided into two groups, those that are antibiotic sensitive and those that are antibiotic resistant. So MRSA is the antibiotic resistant form of Staph aureus. Staph aureus is the number one cause of skin infections and actually infections in the hospital, both the drug resistant and the drug sensitive kind. So MRSA just stands for the strain of Staph aureus that's resistant to all the first-line antibiotics that we would have normally used against this bacteria.
And that's what makes it so dangerous. In fact, when you get it, it can be deadly in what, about 20% of the cases?
Well, it's variable. The vast majority of cases caused by MRSA probably aren't invasive cases. They're skin infection cases. They might be urinary tract infection cases or even lung cases. The study that came out from the CDC just looked at those cases that had gotten into the blood, the bone, or the cerebral spinal fluid, the spinal fluid that surrounds your brain. So they were looking really just at the tip of the iceberg at the most serious infections caused by MRSA.
Mm-hmm. And one of the curiosities of this infection is that it is preventable.
Yes, it is very preventable, both in the hospitals and in the community. It's not 100% preventable. I don't think it'll be 100% preventable until we get a good vaccine for it. But it is preventable right now, and preventable with a lot of simple common sense steps, such as washing your hands in the community, making sure not to share personal items that might have touched bare skin, like washcloths or towels or soap, and treating any skin infections early so that they don't become a problem.
Mm. But one of the problems with it is that it is so easily transmitted. Simply a doctor's lab coat brushing you, that can't transfer the germ.
The most likely time that it gets transferred in the hospital is probably on doctors and nurses, healthcare workers' hands, going from patient to patient. It's sort of theoretically possible for a lab coat to brush by you, but we think it's more likely a hand issue. And in that case, one of the big pushes that's being made in hospitals nationwide is to get doctors and nurses to wash their hands or use some of those alcohol-based hand scrubs. Those can be very effective against staph on your skin.
And that sounds simple, but you'd think that health professionals would know all about that, but actually getting them to do it is sometimes not so easy.
You're absolutely right. Health professionals have known about this since the 1800s, that washing hands is important, but it is very hard to get people to be 100% compliant.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on the line. Again, our guest is Dr. Elizabeth Bancroft, a medical epidemiologist at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, who wrote the editorial Antimicrobial Resistance Not Just for Hospitals in the latest edition of the Journal of the American Medical Association. And let's begin with, this is Tom, and Tom's with us from Eatontown in New Jersey.
Hi, I had been in the hospital in 95. I had ruptured appendix, and a friend found me about 3.5 days later, nearly dead, ended up with MRSA, and VRE apparently made some major medical textbooks because I lived. I went from like 215 pounds to maybe 100 pounds, they said.
My gosh, that is life-threatening.
Yeah, and plus I had also had a problem. They gave me medication like 4 days into the coma that they had. I don't know if it's, I think they had intentionally put me in a coma.
Well, we've heard about what MRSA is. What is a VRE, Tom?
I'm not really sure. I think it's another bunch of antibiotics that you're resistant.
Dr. Bancroft, can you help us out?
VRE is vancomycin-resistant enterococcus. It's another kind of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's primarily found in hospitals. Unlike MRSA, which can be found both in the community and hospitals, VRE is largely exclusively found in hospitals, and it can be quite difficult to treat.
I had seen a similar situation. The infection control specialist doctor, everybody would come into my room with, like, face shields and gowns and stuff, but many of the doctors themselves wouldn't even bother, and the infectious control specialist would come in and look at me in just basically a suit and tie. And then after I was in the hospital for an extended period, they had a psychologist come in, and he just totally ignored the idea that I was in quarantine the whole time. The same situation.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, doctor.
Well, I was going to say, what Tom is describing is actually the proper thing that we advocate hospitals do, that people who have either MRSA, VRE, or the unfortunate souls that have both be put into isolation so that doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, or physical therapists, or even friends and family who come visit, they need to wear a full gown and gloves when they're visiting a patient with this bacteria. We think that if that is correctly adhered to, that will help reduce the spread of these bacteria in hospitals. Unfortunately, Tom brings up the point that not always the doctors and the nurses in the hospitals adhere to these recommendations.
Well, the nurses generally did, and family members were required, but it seems like the higher up the doctor was, I guess in his own sense of status, just totally ignored the idea of putting on a face shield and a special gown that they had to dispose of and wash your hands before they left the room. Inclusive, I had a family member that was notorious for not washing her hands, and I couldn't speak, having learned after the whole fact that she was leaving and going to see my sister had a young child, really ticked me off.
Tom, we're glad you made it.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. You were talking about those precautions and quarantine for those patients that do have it. Nevertheless, there was, I read, some concern that quarantining might lead to the unintended effect that patient doesn't get the same quality of medical care.
That's true. There was a study that was published, I believe also in JAMA, that showed that people who are under these isolation procedures were less likely to be visited by healthcare personnel during the day. So less likely to have a nurse come in and say, hey, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Or, you know, you're doing all right. You know, sort of those regular routine rounds that both nurses and doctors make. And there's some concern that without those kind of routine rounds, without doctors and nurses laying their eyeballs on the patients, they might miss something, a change in how the patient is doing, and might miss if the patient's getting worse. However, this isolation procedures have been used in Europe very successfully to control the spread of MRSA, and they've been used in other hospitals here in the United States and shown, when properly used, they really do reduce the spread of this bug.
Here's an email question from Helen in Little Rock, Arkansas. Do you think that healthcare workers contribute to high infection rates when they wear their work clothes to do grocery shopping, collecting the children from school, etc.? I find myself avoiding touching things people in scrubs have handled in case they've carried something undesirable out of the workplace. The same principle applies to what they take to work with them.
All right. In general, we don't like it when people wear hospital work clothes outside of the hospital, because there is the potential of bringing not just MRSA but some other bugs out into the community. But I think for MRSA, it's probably more likely to be a bug that's spread by hands, and bringing it by hands and by skin into the community. And in general, what we find is the people who get it in the community tend to get the community strain of MRSA, not so much the hospital strain of MRSA. When we talked about what is MRSA, I should have backed up to say there's two sort of major families of MRSA in the United States, a hospital strain and a community strain. And they act actually quite differently. There is a little bit of overlap with them, but they act quite differently in their different spheres. And we don't see that much hospital MRSA affecting regular healthy community members. And that's the kind of MRSA that would occur in the community should Helen's theory be correct.
We're talking today with Dr. Elizabeth Bancroft, a medical epidemiologist at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, who wrote an editorial about antimicrobial resistance, not just for hospitals, in the Journal of the American Medical Association. We're discussing reports about MRSA, which is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, a strain of staph infection which is resistant to antibiotics and which is now being blamed for the death of as many as 19,000 people in this country per year. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And I wanted to ask you, you're quoted in the New York Times today as saying the statistics on the spread of this infection is quote-unquote astounding. How worried should we be?
I think it is quite astounding. I think for many of us who have been studying MRSA for many years, had no idea just how prevalent it was. These numbers are about 2 to 3 times higher than most of us would have expected seeing it. I think the people who should be the most worried about MRSA are people who normally go in and out of the hospitals, who are undergoing hemodialysis, surgery, or who are older. Clearly, the highest rate of MRSA occurs in people who are 65 and older. So the situation that happened to the young student recently, the one who died, mm-hmm. is a very unusual situation for MRSA. The majority of people who get it and who get quite sick from it tend to be older and tend to be people with a lot of exposure to healthcare situations.
Here's a caller. This is Brenda. Brenda with us from San Jose in California.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the air.
Sure.
My question has to do with what the standard protocols are for when a patient has been treated in the hospital and then comes home. We had a very frightening experience earlier this year. My husband contracted a C. difficile bacterial infection that attacked his colon, was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and when he came home, he was given the standard protocol, which was an additional 7 days of an oral antibiotic. He relapsed within 2 days of finishing that and was in the hospital again for another 3 weeks, which was much more severe the second time than the first. When we finally, when all was said and done and he was home and happily recovering and we were able to do our own research, we found very easily online and through other research avenues that the standard protocol gives people only a 25% chance of not having a relapse. And it just seems criminal that this information isn't out there for doctors, that sometimes the standard protocol when you give a patient to come home with is not going to be effective enough to prevent a relapse.
Dr. Bancroft?
Well, I think what Brenda is referring to is just a larger issue of encouraging doctors and getting them to follow what are standard protocols, whether it be infection control protocols within the hospital or standard evidence-based protocols for antibiotic use, for how to treat a heart attack, for when to give antibiotics for surgery, how to manage someone's diabetes or asthma. And to really to work towards getting doctors and healthcare facilities towards using evidence-based standard protocols on a regular manner.
Hmm. Brenda, we're sorry for your experience, and I'm glad it all worked out.
I am too. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. One of the questions about this study that was published, as I understand it, is that there are local variations. For some reason, there was a lot more of this in Baltimore, Maryland, than in various other places that were studied.
That's quite true, and there was the increased rate in Baltimore, and that's been seen in a prior study by the CDC of an increased rate in Baltimore. And we see this across the country. In a study that was published in the New England Journal, for example, looking at how much MRSA occurred in skin infections in people who came to the emergency room, depending on where you were in the country, either 15% of all the skin infections in the emergency room were MRSA, all the way up to 75% of all the skin infections. patients were MRSA. So it can vary in the throughout the country, and it's one of the things that scientists are looking at is try to figure out what are the reasons it's higher in one place than another. Does it have anything to do with temperature? Does it have anything to do with the local population and the way they interact with each other? Maybe some populations are just unlucky and they got it earlier than the other populations, and the other populations will catch up.
Mm-hmm. And is the drug resistance due to, a lot of people are asking, is it due to overuse of antibiotics?
That's a great question. So probably the initial drug resistance that this bug developed was due to overuse of antibiotics. But since then, most of the time, this bug seems to be spread, especially in the community, spread more person to person than because of any individual having had antibiotics. In the hospital, there may be more de novo or new bugs emerging because of the use of antibiotics in hospitals. But in the community, it's probably more likely spread because it's just spreading person to person and not that someone's developing a new strain because they took the antibiotics.
Well, Dr. Bancroft, we thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Elizabeth Bancroft, a medical epidemiologist at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, author of Antimicrobial Resistance, Not Just for Hospitals, in the current issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association. We'll have more on drug-resistant bacteria later this week on Talk of the Nation on Science Friday with Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.